It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A comprehensive new analysis by the New York Times shows that child poverty has plummeted since 1993, a 59% drop. But that doesn't mean our country has solved poverty by any stretch. Nearly 38 million Americans are poor today. That's from the Census Bureau's Poverty in the U.S. report published last week. Many other people above the poverty line struggle to afford a decent life. Let's take stock of the decline. Hear from a leader who is working on this issue. Join in 800-642-1234. George Hinton is here, CEO of Milwaukee's Social Development Commission. It's a community action agency focused on helping and advocating for people in Milwaukee County living in poverty. George, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and having a discussion with you and the community.
Yes, well, the data tell us child poverty has fallen sharply in recent decades. Can you feel that on the ground in your work over the decades trying to lift people out of poverty?
Well, you know, with the recent funding that's come out of the federal government due to the pandemic, there has been a decrease in children who are experiencing a shortage of food. I don't think that's something that's sustainable in the future, because once that type of funding goes away, we're going to be right back where we were prior to 2019. And then the other thing to remember is, you know, my concern is it doesn't necessarily hasn't really necessarily moved anyone out of poverty, but it has provided some level of a safety net for our children. And a lot of that came through feeding children through our school systems. And with the disruption of our schools and their ability to see children face to face, it also put us in a very, very interesting position where the federal funding actually had to take place to make sure that the children didn't go hungry from that perspective.
Let's look at that a little bit more closely there, because as our economy first ground to a halt in COVID, the poverty rate, according to this data, continued to decline. And that's interesting. So what impact did federal relief efforts like the rounds of stimulus checks and the expanded child relief tax credit, what impact did they have on families in poverty?
Well, I think it stabilized the situation where children who are used to going to school and maybe getting a free lunch or being in daycare and receiving meals through that process, it ensured that there was some food available for families and dollars and funding available for families to ensure that the children were not impacted as hard as they could have been if that had not have happened. To be quite honest, if that had not have happened, that number would have shot way up in the other direction. And it would not have been very good for any of our communities across the state.
How serious is the problem of economic hardship for Milwaukee area families and across our state? Can you give us a glimpse?
Well, you know, we talk a lot about food and our children, but parents continue to struggle with how to balance basic living expenses. For example, quality affordable housing is taking a huge chunk of the funding that they do have. And then you put on top of it, if they're not quality homes, then you have this burden of energy and how much it costs. As we know from the time to time, even transportation now with the increase in the cost of gasoline, those may seem insignificant increases, but when you're trying to get back and forth to work and trying to maintain some semblance of control over your life, that becomes competing issues that when you don't have enough funding, you have to make choices. And so most parents will choose to feed their children best they can. But then that puts a burden on them being able to pay for their homes, pay for transportation, get to work, and pay for the energy, and just put clothes on the kids' back and things like that. So it's still a problem. I would say it's worse over the last, it's getting worse because of the increase of cost of housing. We don't have enough, we didn't have enough affordable housing prior to the pandemic. But the inflation of paying rent and even home ownership, has made a huge impact, on, the safety net, the ability to just manage the money that you have, whatever that is.
It goes, it sounds like it's not just about food and measuring that. It's about housing and transportation. It's about childcare, medical costs. There are so many compounding costs. And then you put on top of that inflation, that too, I would imagine, and geographical differences in the cost of living. That all, I would imagine, is part of this calculation.
Oh, yes. And even though wages are going up, the price of everything else is outpacing the wage increases. And while I believe that's good that wages are going up, we have to find ways to control other types of costs so that that becomes a true gain for our citizens in the United States, because we do need to get we are carrying too much poverty in this country. Considering our size and the wealth of our country, you would think that we should be doing much better. And there is many examples across the world, and in Europe and other parts of the world, where they're able to have a balanced approach to wealth and poverty.
We're looking at this long-term downward trend in child poverty across the nation and the realities here in Wisconsin with George Hinton, who's CEO of Milwaukee Social Development Commission, the community action agency tasked with helping and advocating for people in Milwaukee County living in poverty. You can join in what you see or have experienced, 800-642-1234. George, the federal poverty line, the official poverty measure in our country, you know, for a family of six, it's $37,190 a year. Why is this number so low?
I think it's too low because it doesn't reflect what it really costs to live. And if you do just above that poverty line, you're still struggling. And beyond that, and because of the competing cost just to live is not reflective of what it really means to be able to fill that first level of Maslow's needs, you know, safety, food, you know, all those types of things have to be satisfied in order for people to feel comfortable in their life and be able to make decisions that go beyond. And I just think that those lack, you know, so we need to redefine what poverty looks like in the United States. Some of my colleagues across the state really think that it's a number that was used historically. It doesn't necessarily reflect the reality of poverty across the country today.
How would you go about redefining what the economic reality of American poverty is? Because the current poverty line, it matters a lot because there are so many benefits that rely on this poverty measure.
Yeah, and that's the problem too. You know, we look at poverty from the standpoint of a line, and we think if we can just hold the line, then people are going to be okay. Well, what it does is it keeps people from being able to be successful because they know if they go beyond the line of what that assistance is, they may lose everything. It's called a cliff, and I think we have to be a little bit more sophisticated on how we build with our policies and things like that, how we build the strategy of helping people get out of poverty. People need assistance to move through the reality of poverty. If you earn a $5 more and you lose a significant benefit from the government, that's not a motivation to keep moving. It's really a strategy of it makes sense to just stay where you're at just so you're not able to so you don't disrupt whatever sense of normalcy that you have in your life and with your family. So if that makes sense, we need to rethink it really shouldn't matter what the poverty line is. What matters is how we put our policies in place to help people so they can they can truly get out of poverty and stay out of poverty.
George Hinton with us as we discuss the work to eradicate poverty in Wisconsin as the nationwide trend of children living in poverty plummets over the decades. You can join in on the challenges you see, the solutions at work in your community. Maybe you have worked with the Social Development Commission. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss American poverty statistics and this nationwide drop of children who are poor. But school nutrition leaders, they caution about the effects of the universal free school lunch program that went away at the start of this school year. Caitlin Harrison leads the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin, telling WDJT-TV.
It makes me very nervous for families. Hunger is such a difficult thing to see.
Join in on hunger and your story, 800-642-1234. George Hinton is CEO of Milwaukee's Social Development Commission and stays with us. George, let's look more at nutrition. You mentioned it earlier. The analysis from Child Trends shows that free and reduced lunch for students in 2019 reduced child poverty by 7%. And that is before the universal school meals program that started last year ended this school year. How have free meals affected Milwaukee students?
Well, I think that we should maintain that free meals for all children. Just the fact that people, most cases, are in the public school system is an indication that they are at poverty or near poverty, especially in Milwaukee County. And it ensures that there's a safety net for our children, that there is some assurance that all children are getting a meal, despite some of the other pressures that may be impacting families at many levels of income, even beyond what we perceive to be poverty line.
The Universal School Meals Program cost the USDA $11 billion more than the previous free and reduced lunch program with income restrictions. And some are arguing that the money could be better spent in more efficient ways to address poverty. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's some things that's an absolute that we should do. We should never compromise on taking care of our children. And I'm going to throw another one out that's not necessarily about nutrition, but, you know, lead is one of the most dangerous things affecting our children across the country. Mm-hmm. Those are things we should never compromise on. And then there are things that we can talk about doing transformative type changes that would make a difference, because I agree we're not going to just be able to move the dime by just providing transactions constantly. We're going to have to look at looking at our philosophy on how we deal with the issues of poverty from the standpoint of understanding that sometimes it's baked into the system, and how do we unbake it? But we should do that with an idea that our children come first always.
When you talk about being baked into the system and how to unbake it, I'm thinking about how pervasive myths and stereotypes about poverty are. And I'm going to, you know, say some of them now. People in poverty are lazy. They make bad decisions. Poverty is a life choice. Is there still this type of mindset out there?
Yeah, I would even go as far as to say they also think only people of color are in poverty and those types of things. And none of those are true. I mean, yes, I mean, even in the world of people who have wealth, you find people who are incompetent and lazy and all those types of things, but they're not defining people who have wealth as that, and we shouldn't define people in poverty that way, because they are all working very hard to survive. They just haven't been given some of the opportunities maybe afforded others that have allowed people to have extended wealth that helps you be able to deal with some of the ups and downs that are natural to just life. I went to a seminar one time, talked to a lady about the problem of people having eviction, for example. And we were talking about eviction, especially from the poor community standpoint. And I recall her saying that, well, my daughter had the same issue. She had trouble. She got evicted. And then my family was able to just wrap around her and put her someplace else, give her some help around her addictions and those types of things. And then they moved on. That's not the case with people who are poor. They don't have those extended resources to keep them from spiraling out in some respects and getting worse.
Those personal family safety nets. What about poverty as a cycle? If children grow up in poverty, are they likely to live in poverty as adults?
Statistics, I think there's some evidence that shows that we have generational poverty. I grew up in poverty, and so we know it's not an absolute process. I think education is important. Again, if we concentrate on our children, we probably will do a better job of making sure that more people are able to break the cycle of poverty. Again, children, absolute investment. That's what we should think. And education should not be secondary to any other. We should have a baseline of quality for all children, and making sure that they're fed and making sure they're taken care of. And then I think we will see a difference in terms of the outcomes that we see. If you don't make the investments, right investments into young people, you're not going to see that as an outcome when they get older. And for example, lead poisoning is a negative impact on young people, and that shows up a lot of time in people who are in prison and those types of things.
George Hinton with us, CEO of Milwaukee Social Development Commission, as we unpack child poverty in America and the downward trend over the decades. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. George, here in Wisconsin, how could government assistance programs be streamlined and strengthened and improved, in your opinion?
Like I said, we really need to be, I think we should be progressive. And I know people look at that and say, oh, my God, progressive. I don't mean it from that perspective, but innovative and progressive in terms of understanding it. We shouldn't have a cliff. It should be progressively applied to folks so people can be successful as they do better and not lose everything. I think if we can be more innovative in how we think about this from a policy standpoint, I think you'll see more people be able to then not only find themselves out of poverty, but begin to get the cycle of poverty out of the way in terms of generational poverty.
I wonder, will these historic declines in child poverty be a one-time blip, or do they, you know, hint at a new era where policymakers realize the level of poverty and hardship in America and make changes?
Well, I mean, I hope people understand, and I think people need to understand, poverty does not mean not working. People in poverty are working every day. A lot of them are working. Most are working. A large percentage of people are working. They are the essential workers that struggled during the pandemic and the ones that took a big hit because they weren't as healthy as the rest of the nation. So we need to understand that, you know, if we don't do something about some of these systems that hold people in poverty, we're going to have to deal with this from generation to generation. I don't think it's healthy for our country. And to be quite honest, it's not a very good look when we match ourselves across the world. We want democracy to be the standard for the world, then let's make sure that it looks good for all levels of our community. And it's not perceived as good for people who have means and not people who do not.
George, your commission's summit on poverty is set for next month. We only have a few seconds left, but what is the focus of this year's summit?
We're going to be talking about the pandemic and how we came out of it. What did we learn? What can we do? What can we hold on to? pretty much like talking about our children. Do we make sure that they stay in a position where they're not hungry? We need to have those kinds of discussions because we learned a lot. We were very innovative as a state, as a country during this time. And how do we hold on to some of those innovations? And how do we make sure that we as a nation don't slip right back to just same old, same old? And look for what we learned well, what we discovered, and how do we fix it? How do we make it different?
George, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
George Hinton is CEO of Milwaukee's Social Development Commission. We have a link to the Child Poverty Report at WPR.org/mornings. Up ahead, medical examiners nationwide are overloaded and understaffed. We hear what the impacts of stretched forensic pathologists have on grieving families. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News Update is next here on the Ideas Network.